I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, and as you know, it is the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, Geeks of the World, and you to keep current on all the things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson, and he's Tom Merritt.
I certainly am, Scott, and I haven't changed that, and I don't intend to change it.
Yeah, got your gavel. The good judge has his gavel today.
Gavel McLeod is with me.
Good, because we really ought to like put a little name on it, like a little plate. Gavel,
yeah,
McLeod, I like it.
Plaque right there on the...
Why not take our dumb metaphor and extend it as far as we can?
Why not push things too far?
Sure. Speaking of pushing things too far, we have a couple of guests that I'm super stoked to have here. Let's start first with a familiar face on the network, Mr. Justin Robert Young. You know him. You love him. Hey, what's up?
Hi, boys. How are you guys?
Good to have you here. We never talked to you on any other shows, so let's do it here.
Nope. I'll tell you what. Further mixing up the incestuous blend of only five voices happening on any variable different number of combinations.
Oh, the truth stings. Also with us, a good friend of the network and the program, Mr. Andrew Main. You're not supposed to trust him, but he's on that show on A&E, Don't Trust Andrew Main, every Monday. And he's here with us tonight. Andrew, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Yeah, it's awesome. We had you guys not together, but separately back in the forecast days, I want to say.
Yeah.
And so this is a kind of a reunion of sorts. I mean, you guys hang out all the time, but, you know, this is a cool way to get you both on at the same time.
Ain't no thing.
Now, Andrew, you've recently made a blood enemy in Brian Brushwood, who has his own show, Hacking the System.
Yeah, how you feel about that? Let's get into this. Let's make some dirt.
Well, I mean, we've been blood enemies for, you know, the dawn
so
of time.
You're bloodier enemies then.
Yeah. In the English sense, like they're bloody enemies.
You're bloody enemies.
Yeah.
What did I do this time? Are you confusing our plan to dominate all of media together jointly?
Yeah.
That's what I'm confusing.
Oh, no. We're blood enemies. We're totally. That doesn't come until much later. No, this is our plan to extend and embrace.
Yeah.
So this is television bringing blood enemies together in cooperation.
Right.
We're back to back on this.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't...
We're kind of like killing everybody else off and it'll just be us.
Well, that's the question is, in the end of all this, could you guys, worst case scenario, let's say both the shows don't work out, and heaven forbid they don't, because I think
I'm not here to jinx it.
No one ever watches either.
Man, whatever happened to that sunny disposition the Mormons were famous for?
Listen, my kids think it's their favorite new TV show, period. They think it's the greatest
hypothetically
thing.
Hypothetically, assuming that TV is kind of mercurial and makes rash decisions. If we lived in that world, go ahead.
Okay, so let's just say that happened. You guys could join up, grow your beards real long, and bid on things in old abandoned storage units. And you would end up with the coolest combination powerhouse reality show ever made.
Dork Dynasty.
That would be awesome. And I don't want to tell too many stories out of school, but prior to this, there has been interest in some form of that, and perhaps with my cohort here, Mr. Justin Robert Young, in doing something of the three of us in some sort of medium involving television.
Goodness gracious! You're killing us with these. This is some kind of leak or something. I feel like we're hearing.
Well, let's just say this: like, number one, television is very, very exciting, and then less exciting. You know, like it is constantly oscillating. It only has two switches. Either everything, it's like light speed, you can see the stars streaking by you, or it is the cold abyss of space. And we very much like to live in the exciting element as much as we can.
Sure. I mean,
you're saying television is a dish best served cold.
Yeah. Yes. On Dish Network, though. Come on now. Get that behind you. Well, good. Well, I'm glad you're both here because we got stuff to talk about. You're both a couple of big nerds and we have things to hit right up top.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, take it away.
Entertainment Weekly doing an issue this week about fan favorite series returning. Of course, Veronica Mars on the cover because they're coming back with the fan-based or the fan-funded, partially fan-funded movie. They have an article about Pushing Daisies, Chuck, Scrubs, Rome, of course, Firefly. But to kind of tease people to get the issue, they've got a piece on EW.com about Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. And in that piece, Jed Whedon says, quote, "We have many songs written and the plot outlined, but needless to say, we've been busy." And he also says Dr. Horrible 2 will exist in some format or another at some point in the future. Unfortunately, the when is still unclear.
Well, of course it is, because he's too busy making the Avengers movies and stuff, and his brother's no, all... That,
this is Jed.
Well, yeah.
So he's too busy making the But he did Shield say,
yeah,
show,
with,
right?
with Joss being busy making Avengers, and yeah, Jed's working on S.H.I.E.L.D.
So could Zach. But could Jed... Yeah, all the Whedons are busy, but even if Jed wanted to, could he just swing in and direct the thing and not... And Joss...
Well, and they got to get the actors. They're all doing other stuff.
Well, and also remember... This Dr. Horrible was only a thing because the strike, you know, there was a lot, all these people had time on their hands because they weren't working on the things they normally work on. And then they did this. I don't know, but I feel weird putting that in with all these other shows that lived, had lives and died, some prematurely, some, you know, kind of to where we would hope they would be, and at least they hit heights that we were very excited about. Because Dr. Horrible's, it's a one-off. Yeah, yeah, they could all get together 30 years from now and do it. It would, like, still be structurally and creatively, theoretically, about as interesting as it would be if they did it a year afterward.
That's a good point. Andrew, were you pining for Rome to make a big comeback? This is the first I've heard of Rome being on any list of consideration.
Get out of my face. Rome's the best.
I like Rome.
Rome's pretty awesome. I think that you get, you know, you certainly get two things that are happening. One is you certainly get these franchises that you say, man, looking at how people consume media now, if you did a little bit differently, how it could have succeeded. And you take a show like, you know, aforementioned Firefly, you know, in one form it was really, you know, maybe didn't quite succeed, but then you look at what it does, you know, on demand elsewhere, things like that. You know, I don't know, like, would a show like S.H.I.E.L.D. have stayed on as long 10 years ago without replay, without all the other things that come into play? And so that affects it. The only two is that you have this fan base that when they were younger and into these things, they weren't as worth much to advertisers. Now that they're a little bit older, but they're still into this stuff, it's maybe more, you know, of value.
Well, we'll see.
Let's also not forget the reason EW has been a champion of this, and Entertainment Weekly as kind of a place with the weekly content has been very, very beneficial, has benefited a lot from television's kind of golden age over the past 15 years. And these kind of issues are very much a self-celebration of how important the television critic has become over the last 10 years, where otherwise they were, you know, the sad stepsister to the movie critic. You know, if you were reviewing television for a living, it was a low rung. And Entertainment Weekly and a lot of the people that have kind of been huge at the fact, because they were in a position to say, hey, look, this show gets no ratings, but it's great and you should watch it. And therefore, they developed a lot of close relationships with the showrunners and stuff like that. So it is these two things, Entertainment Weekly, a weekly magazine that covers a lot of television, and these like fan favorite things. They are very much their own part of their own little echo chamber.
And likely the conversation that Justin just had with himself about, I don't know if Dr. Horrible belongs in the same category as Firefly and Scrubs, et cetera, was probably the conversation the editor had and said, well, let's just put it on the website and then we can tease the magazine. And then everybody was happy.
That seems likely. To me.
Hey, knowyourmeme.com put out an alert this afternoon that a new hashtag is sweeping the Twitters. Hashtag so white outside. Fun way to talk about the crazy amounts of snow we've been getting. Also a way to poke fun at white people.
Huh. Interesting. Hold on a minute. I think this is entirely never supposed to be anything but a double meaning. Like, you know, nobody's claiming that they just innocently said so white outside because of the snow, right? Like, no way.
I don't think anyone's making any claims.
All right, good.
Oh, those silly white people.
Yeah, right.
But there's, you know, so white outside, college students are discussing whether the snow is coming from a position of unearned privilege.
Oh, jeez.
So white outside, it looks like a Tea Party rally. So white outside, the snow DVR'd every episode of Girls.
Healthy or detrimental to society, Justin? What do you say when somebody does something like this? Because if we were saying, let's say it was a power outage.
Let's not. Let's actually not even use this as hypothetical. Let's stop it right there.
I love that you knew right where I was going with that. But of course you get the point.
Because of course we all did. And because we should not say it. We should refrain from saying it.
All right.
So wide outside on the East Coast, Northeast folks, how are you coping? Share your stories at CNN I Report. That one's not very funny. Well,
that's not a good one at all. I don't think they get it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this just seems like white people are in large ways the punching bag of the internet, and I think everybody's comfortable with that, right? So white people outside. Love being made fun of, and everybody
care.
Else who's not white loves making fun of white people.
Totally down.
So
with
white
being
outside, when I walked out of my house, the wind whispered, "But where are you really from?"
That was pretty good. All right, Andrew is a guy who can make his hand come through a glass wall, seemingly by magic. What's your take on this?
I think, Tom just illustrated one of the useful things it can be. You know, the last joke is sort of a funny way to point out something that you'd be made aware of things that you say that may make other people uncomfortable, you know? And so I think that, you know, having that pointed out, like, oh yeah, saying something like that, so where are you from or whatever, maybe isn't as innocuous to the receiver as it is to the person saying it, you know? And hearing these things, you go, oh, I remember when I was a kid, like, I had a friend who had one of those, like, remember the Truly Tasteless joke books?
Yes.
Oh, right.
They were there, like, the really, and they were like horrible jokes. And then I remember they started reading jokes about like WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants and stuff. And I didn't get them because, you know, they all like, you know, felt, you know, I'm like, well, no, that seems normal. And they're like, no,
but that's what I eat. I don't understand why that's funny.
Yeah. So I think that sometimes looking at this stuff, it can be very informative. Go, oh,
I don't know why people find soda crackers so funny.
It's a safe, this kind of thing is a safe zone to kind of be exposed to that sort of stuff. I agree. Let's move to the controversial topic of Civilization 5, which has got a new mod, the Nation of Arstotzka from the Papers, Please game. If you don't know Papers, Please, Scott can tell you all about it. He introduced me to it.
Played it extensively. That game is great.
It's free, right?
Yeah. No, I think it's like $5. I think it costs a little something, but it's on Steam and it's amazing.
You enjoy Papers, Please, now you can bring Papers, Please Nation into your Civ 5. The custom unit is the Border Guard. He's weak in the field, but he gets bonus points in friendly territory. And you can build the Border Checkpoint, which helps thwart enemy spies in your cities. It was created by a Steam user named SnakeEater337, and which requires the Brave New World expansion.
It's fine. It's one of these things. It's only controversial because Papers, Please in itself is very controversial, and the game, while seemingly is nothing but about kind of boring procedures. Like, you're a border guard, people come up with their papers, you say Papers, Please. It's all presented in a very kind of Cold War era looking Eastern Bloc drizzle. Everything's just kind of gray and horrible. They give you your papers. You have to go through certain processes to make sure they are who they say they are. And if they're not, you have to send them off with guards to who knows what fate. And it's all very dark and kind of twisted. And you get kind of wrapped up in this sort of meta story of what it's like to be in a country where these are the ways things go. And if somebody just has a number wrong on their passport, then they're out of here and you don't know what that means or where they're going to go. You're at some point you begin scanning people and seeing their basically seeing them completely naked, but you're looking for bombs or for, you know, contraband or whatever. And you suddenly realize, man, this is a kind of a twisted, dark thing. But it's really good in that it makes your brain kind of, I don't know, expands the way you think and it changes the way you kind of perceive these sorts of things. So it's only controversial because that was already controversial. In the game of Civ 5, it's really just stats that are going to be affected. It's not really like, for example, a parent shouldn't be worried that their kid is playing this mod and will suddenly become, you know, I don't know, sensitive to the needs of bad countries or of bad governments or something.
That seems like a fairly high level problem too, to like, you know, it's not like, oh, my kid's going to play a video game and shoot somebody. It's my kid's going to play this game and become sympathetic to the ministrations of North Korea.
Right. That's exactly
this
what I was trying to say.
Not the Flappy Bird thing.
No, it's not.
No, there's neither Flappy nor Bird involved in either of these.
No.
So wait, you're saying that the Papers, Please game on Steam, good. This is just kind of a coat of paint on Civ 5.
Yeah, it's just a thing. Somebody was inspired by the other game. They put it in there. It's
nifty.
It's nifty.
you know.
So that's cool. Yeah. So you go, you played, you're alone on Valentine's Day today. You're crying. Right. You play a game for a couple hours. You feel better about yourself. You send some people to a prison camp. Bada bing, bada boom, you go to sleep tomorrow. It's Saturday.
I, for one, am all for the gamification of the dehumanization of the DMV. And, you know, making it in a game like this sounds fantastic.
TSA. TSA. Oh, wait, it's USA, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't get that.
Hey, the creators of Birth of Man had launched an appeal on Kickstarter for $600,000 to fund a production of a movie set in a Minecraft world. They were going to mix some live action, but then we're going to have landscapes and creatures and weapons and stuff from Minecraft. And then it disappeared in a day. Up pops Notch, a.k.a. Marcus Persson, the creator of Minecraft, who said on Twitter, "We don't allow $500,000 Kickstarter projects based on our intellectual property without any deals in place." So,
yeah, I think there is a sense that you can take an engine of a game that you own and you can go in there and you can film and use it and make machinima and whatever you want to your heart's content. And I don't think that's so true when it comes to this. If you're doing playthroughs on YouTube and you know, that stuff tends to help the game rather than hurt it anyway in terms of exposure.
Well, that's why this caught my eye, because there is a culture in Minecraft of we go into Minecraft and we create things. We create whole replicas of cities, and then we do films and we share them with each other. And these guys just wanted to make a really top of the line Minecraft film and put it on YouTube.
Okay. But let's take a look at this sentence. "We don't allow $500,000 Kickstarter projects based on our intellectual property without any deals in place." So you could make the argument to say that Notch is not necessarily against people doing these big things. Just come talk
but
to us.
Nobody needs a... I'm not justifying the Kickstarter. I'm saying I see why this happens, because nobody needs a deal to go shoot their own little Minecraft video. And it's tolerated. The community encourages that. They were taking it to the logical extension from that community, and they ran up against
the rest of the world. Fundraising using somebody else's licensed property. I mean, that's I think the key thing.
Oh, it's illegal. Yeah.
I mean, when you say, hey, and you know, $500,000, somebody's making a profit off of this.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's getting their salary or whatever for the time they work on it, you know, they're not, you know, the money's going to pay for people to do this. So you can define profit however you want. But I think that just is when they're like, oh, we're raising $500,000 to do this Minecraft thing. Ooh, it's I love, you know, I think it's great that there's fan stuff out there, but you get to a point where you're trying to create product. And also look at the success of the Lego movie. Mm-hmm. You know, Minecraft, I am sure their negotiations of their movie as a property, and all of a sudden, do you want the studio or somebody who may have licensed or be talking to acquiring this going, well, what about this thing? Why do we need to pay you?
Yeah, I guarantee there will be a Minecraft movie at some point, and it will be an officially, you know, licensed thing. It'll be a big deal. It'll be in theaters.
I guarantee they're going to development. I don't know if we'll ever see a Minecraft movie.
I think we'll see it. I think it's so big with kids in the 8 to 12-year-old range that that's money left on the table if they don't do it. I really think it would be that big.
But the other thing is the creators of Birth of a Man have shut up. They're not saying anything about this, and Notch really hasn't said much. Mm-hmm. It may be that these guys are talking and Notch wants to figure out a way to help them do it without losing his rights.
I think that's the key. The key is like, let's just make sure. I mean, and who knows? Who knows where you know, Mojang's, you know, general thought process is on this. But Notch could have not said anything. He didn't need to put his name on this controversy. He did because he wanted to. I mean, he has an openness with his community that is very, very admirable. And he made a point to say, you know, there needs to be a deal, even if it is just you guys signing off and saying that you understand that we own the rights to these kind of things. And you're not going to make a movie and then come back at us and say, well, we invented this element of Minecraft and therefore we should be able to sell, you know, dolls and stuff for it, you know, because it became really successful. I think there just needs to at the very least, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that Notch should have peace of mind. Mojang should have peace of mind with something that is raising $500,000.
It'll be hard. Some will jump to some conclusions. There was a couple of years ago a run-in between Notch and some community folks doing playthroughs and stuff online, specifically the Yogg's cast and others. And at one point he, you know, basically just written them off and said, "I'm not having anything to do with you guys ever again. You shouldn't be allowed to do this. This is my game." So there is some precedence for him not wanting his baby used in any facet or way that he doesn't have some control over, even that kind of commonly accepted, hey, we're playing games on YouTube kind of way. So there's some history there. I'm not saying that affects this or that they aren't different now or that he isn't even different now, but there could be an argument to, you know, that he's sort of just against anything to do with Minecraft unless he's got full control over it.
And well, that's, listen, that's got to be hard. Because let's say, all right, so you have a certain decorum on your programs on Frog Pants, Scott, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. That's safe to say. What if somebody else, and even though you are licensed, you know, with Creative Commons on a lot of this stuff, somebody just went out and said, hey, listen, I want to do a thing set inside, you know, using Frog Pants audio.
Yeah.
And I want to, like, you know, I just want to have a commentary track where I'm screaming obscenities over top of what you're saying. Now, some of you might be already saying, that's Tuesdays on the morning stream during my set.
Yeah, I thought touché. That, personally.
Right.
But, like, even if you are cool with that philosophically, it has to kind of turn your stomach, not in a bad way, but just in a, I wonder what is going to happen way, or I don't know if I'm fully comfortable with the final product of this kind of way as a creator, oh, right? Yeah,
for sure. I would totally feel that way. And if he does, he's right to feel that way, especially in this case where it's clearly something's weird. I just think there's generally a feeling on the internet that once something becomes big and such a big part of your consciousness, and if you are so into Minecraft, you're going to make a $600 million film about it or in it. You have already accepted Minecraft as your Lord and Savior. It is your thing that is ubiquitous and everywhere, and we all are in it, and we all love it, and there is no one thinks of it as somebody owns this, or this could be a licensable thing, or that's the only explanation I could have. Either that, or they're just grossly negligent or did this on purpose where they avoided talking to them first.
We've seen that a lot. There's been a lot of, repeated, there have been a few other fan things where they go, oh, let's do this, and then they look at the Kickstarter, et cetera, and they go, okay, well, let's raise some money for it, mm-hmm, and it goes beyond somebody doing something in their garage to catching the attention of people who own the properties, and that sort of that line gets crossed once you start saying, I'm gonna actively publicly fundraise to do something to this property.
Yeah,
you know.
Yep, I agree.
Let's go to building something yourself from the ground up. Spanish hacker Jose Julio built a smart air hockey robot out of a 3D printer. He took parts from his rep wrap, combined it with a PlayStation 3 camera. He actually used the rep wrap to print the brackets and the puck and the paddle first. Then he scavenged the machine for things like motors and drivers and belts and bearings and rods. Used the Arduino Mega and the ramps board out of the rep wrap for the electronics. Put a PS3i to become the robot's vision system.
Then he lost a paddle and he had to put it all back together again.
And then print out a new paddle. Print out a bunch of paddles if you're going to do this, Jose Julio. Yeah. No, but the thing works. Like, it's actually kind of difficult to beat, and it's pretty impressive to watch.
Yeah, that's cool. I love crap like this, especially because it's a 3D printer he used the parts from. Like, it's like you had a guy sew your suits, and then you killed the guy to make the skin oil you need for your suit to put on it later. Like, what a weird way to just sort of throw the machine away.
He can just buy another part, buy more parts with a rep wrap. He says, I used this because they're easy to replace parts.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. That's pretty awesome, though. I love when people do this crap.
So wait, I'm just starting a video here right now.
Yeah, click right into the middle because that thing moves fast.
What? And it knows where
the puck is. That's crazy. He's like Mad Max,
dude. I'll tell
you
what. Remember I was saying before, play the Papers, Please mod on Civ 5 if you're lonely on Valentine's Day tonight? Hell no, man. Go over to Julio's house, man. He's got this awesome robot. This thing will whip your ass.
Just walk right in. Yeah. The robot's ready to play. Yeah. That's the best part.
Yeah, it won't get tired. We'll say, let's go to sleep.
Yeah, go down there. You and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Stop by.
You and Jose Julio.
I'd like to see him build two, one on the other end, so it can play itself.
Oh,
he's
no.
actually planning to do that.
Oh, my gosh.
He said that in his blog.
That's great. Best use for the PS3i camera, too, by the way.
Is Julio married? Just wondering.
Not now.
We'll find out.
He actually has kids. That doesn't mean he's married.
Did he make it for his daughter to play? And I'm thinking, like, man, that's kind of lazy. you build an automated hockey table once, you never have to play again.
That's right.
And finally, US viewers can watch nearly every episode of Gargoyles on YouTube legally because it was provided by Disney. And they even divided it up into playlists by season. There's inexplicably a few missing episodes. Maybe some of you know why, but season two's Mark of the Panther and Sentinel are not there. Season three's Generations and To Serve Mankind are not there, but every other episode is up and you can just kind of start the playlist and just binge on Gargoyle.
We should have a contest. Is it a, like a quiz show and it would be called, is it a Star Trek title of an episode or a title of a Gargoyles episode?
Because I think Sentinel's both. For yeah. sure.
Sentinels, Generations, a movie title. Sure. Season three, let's see. To Serve Mankind may as well be. I mean, those sound like Star Trek names.
Well,
to
that
me.
Was a Twilight Zone, To Serve Man. Or is that our one?
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
That was a Twilight Zone.
Gargoyles is good. You could do, there are a lot bigger waste of your time than that. I actually kind of like that cartoon.
And you see what's coming to Netflix streaming on March 6th?
What's that?
Clone Wars.
Whoa, really? Oh, the, right. the good
yeah,
one.
The Plus final the, season.
Yeah, plus yeah, the final season.
The one that nobody's seen yet that they supposedly yep. were going to do no matter what. That's great.
Yeah, which, you know, to be consistent with the rest of the series, we're going to have to watch people we maybe like die. So.
Yeah, why not?
Dig in, kids.
Well, did you see the trailer with the guest appearance, the guest voice appearance?
Uh-oh. Who is it? Is
Can
it Luke?
I say?
Is it Luke Skywalker? Is it Mark Hamill?
No, you're going to be so disappointed now.
Oh, is it the guy who did Guido? I don't know who.
Guido?
Guido. Did I say Guido?
I don't know if it's
father his Guido Sarducci.
You know, Guido the bounty hunter, duh.
Who's the guest voice, Tom?
It's Liam Neeson.
Oh, that's nice. That's cool. Qui-Gon Jinn there.
Yeah. I know, that's cool. I mean, like, they just announced, you know, Freddie Prinze Jr. is, you know, doing voiceover for Rebels, so.
Yeah, he's the main, he's the Luke Han Solo hybrid character.
I heard somebody announced, said the character of one of the, like IO9 or somebody said, yeah, the character looked like the guy that tried to sell them pot in Hawaii.
That's great.
Got the little ponytail, the goatee, you know.
That's so this, great.
To loop back to Gargoyles real quick, Gargoyles and the Batman animated series was, I mean, that was very much in my wheelhouse when I was growing up, but like, are there like the dark kids animated shows? Like, was that a genre just of the early to mid 90s? Are there contemporary shows like that?
I don't know if there's so much anymore. Ooh. I mean, you could, the problem is there's so much now that we don't know what the half of it is. Oh. So you could look at, you know, Legend of Korra and stuff like that and say, well,
I guess
that's
so. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of- no, absolutely. I mean, that was when that happened in the 90s because you had a demographic that started aging and were still watching cartoons and you wanted to create content for them. And so instead of trying to capture 9-year-olds, you're trying to capture 12-year-olds. And now you have, look at Adult Swim.
Yeah, good
you know,
point.
Look at well, we have oh yeah, blocks programming blocks dedicated towards darker or just that kind of offbeat humor. Archer, look at how popular a show like that is.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I guess I don't mean necessarily like adult or like for adults, but like you said, like the difference between the 9-year-old shows and the 12-year-old shows, and the idea that you can do something that is thematic. I mean, both of those are very gothic shows.
Yeah, they're deep shows. They take themselves very seriously, and they are not like the Super Friends or He-Man's of yore when they were clearly just toy commercials, and they were very careful about themes. Those shows weren't so much careful about
these were toy
things.
Commercials that took themselves very seriously.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I should say they were still kind
well,
of
The Simpsons made
toys.
That all possible, right? Because I remember when The Simpsons was on. At first, people were like, I don't think this is a good idea to have a cartoon that says things like this and deals with these themes, because the assumption was if it's a cartoon, it's for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not the assumption anymore.
I'm glad we live
but at
in
least
a world
that was prime time. That was always prime time.
Sure.
Yeah. Like these shows, Gargoyles, Batman, and everything.
True.
They were in the kids' block.
Yeah, that was Saturday mornings and after school. You're right.
But I'm saying that Simpsons kind of made it like, oh, well, maybe cartoons can be a little darker, you know?
Yeah.
And he had like, sure. and
changed you know the conversation.
Doesn't get enough credit was Married with Children as a sitcom.
Oh, yeah.
Humor oh into, you know, a much more suggestive and bluer place that then since then would you watch what was outrageous when that was on
yeah no. and you watch it now
well, yeah
and it's
good you go back All in the Family the same sort of thing
sure
right?
I just
that
never,
was like
I just
no one should watch that show at the time and now it's so tame
the Married with Children crowd reaction stuff though I hated it I couldn't deal with it just whenever somebody walk in and or say something sarcastic and the whole place would go freaking well, hate that.
Well, that was really the Fox network at that time was really one big exaggerated, you know, audience scream. Like that was just basically all of their.
Hey,
content.
Look at me. I'm Fox.
Yeah, kind of true. Our friends at HelloFresh would like you to know that you can eat food while you watch old TV. In fact, most of that Batman stuff's on Netflix now. including that future one, Batman and Batman Beyond, which is also pretty dark and cool. And you
Batman
Bath and Beyond at your local mall. HelloFresh.com is on the internet, though. They're easy to get to. HelloFresh.com is the place. Make cooking fun again by picking recipes from actual chefs. They'll send those farm fresh ingredients right to your door. And in 30 minutes or less, you're a hero and making the best meal you've ever made. That's HelloFresh.com and current geek 50 at checkout for 50% off first time customers. See if they're right for you and if they deliver to you. If they do, save some money. Current geek 50. For 50% off.
In case you missed a look at one of the best-dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
Yes. Let's talk about the Flappy Bird deal a little bit.
Yeah, so Flappy Bird, over the weekend, I was actually at a Korean restaurant, read the Twitter post on Saturday saying 22 hours from now, no more Flappy Bird. And then, of course, the internet revolted. And there's plenty of ways to get Flappy Bird still, obviously, but it's out of the App Store and everybody wants to know why. And what he said, it ruined my simple life. And now what has happened is an army of Flappy Birds, from Flappy Bert to things that have nothing to do with either Flappy or birds, have kind of moved into the gap.
Flappy, what's that Putin one that showed up today? Flapamir, I think they call it.
Flapamir Putin?
Yeah, he's flying around. He's flying around, and the things, instead of big pipes to get through, and it's him instead of a bird, and he's flapping his wings or his arms.
You want to know what? It's hard for me to look at this in any other light other than Vietnam just running up the score on the good old US of A.
That's right.
That's the final indignity.
Yeah.
You're trolling for a Nixon era reference there, and I recognize.
I am. I'm looking for it, Tom. Come on. I know you got it.
Give it.
I followed this. I thought this was really fascinating, the whole rise of this. And then the developer is interesting, but you look at when he pulled it, and Justin points out he's Vietnamese, and Vietnamese culture is kind of very interesting because you have historic, and then it's still a communist country. There are still provisions about what you can and cannot do. Addictions in totalitarian states are very much frowned upon. And so when he looked at this thing that he genuinely thought would help people relax, was something where people were being obsessed with, he probably felt a little bit more differently about it than somebody would be from here, or even, let's say, Korea or someplace like this, where addicted to video games is a way of life.
Yeah, and a great big capitalist like, you know, me looking at it and going, how could you just walk away from 50 grand in ad revenue a day?
Let's break down that figure.
All right, go for it.
Because that's the big honking figure that everybody's repeating and everyone just keeps linking back to the first person who said it. And Tom, you will probably follow this closer with Daily Tech News Show. Do we have any sense that $50,000 a day in advertising was what this dude was raking in?
It's possible, but it's not what he was making, right? Like, somebody did a back of the envelope calculation and said, well, it looks like he's getting about this many downloads a day. And if he had this kind of ad deal with this kind of rev share, he'd be making about $50,000.
This is how
right
Polygon
now.
Came to the number, was doing what Tom's saying right there.
But okay, let's say it was $10,000 a day, whatever you want to call it. The per capita income in Vietnam is like $2,000 a year. And so for a young Vietnamese guy living there and who's made more money than he's going to be able to spend in his lifetime in that country, again, standard living far lower than what we're used to. That is like, for it hits millions and millions of. He's rich. He's richest he's never going to need for there. I think that's part of what motivated is that it's not. If we look at it, take away our bias standards and look at it how it is. If you're in Vietnam, the kind of money he was making, what else can you know? What more do you need?
Well, yeah. I mean, and also calling attention to yourself by making that amount of money. I thought it was very telling that when he went and talked to Bloomberg, he had just come from meeting with the deputy prime minister of Vietnam. This developer of an app had just gone to meet the deputy prime minister of Vietnam and then was allowed to go sit down and talk to Bloomberg. And when he talked to Bloomberg, he talked very much, Andrew, about, I didn't want this to be an addictive game. I just wanted people to have relaxing fun. I'm going to continue to make games and hopefully they'll just be fun games. But he was really hitting all those points. He hasn't talked about how much money he made. I imagine that the state has taken a chunk of it, just as they do in every country. They take a chunk of your earnings for taxes. And he's probably really, when he says they ruined my simple life, I think he means it. It's not media attention, just it's also government attention and lots of other things that you're alluding to, Andrew, socially just not not what he wanted to happen with this
and
game.
I mean, it's a place, I think the army still owns the telephone system. So, I mean, it tells you the kind of place you're living there. And all those factors, plus you look at what happens to people who win the lottery. I mean, it's like, it's sad, the saddest thing in the world. And for, you know, all of a sudden everybody, you know, and here he's out there, he's like, oh, he's rich. He's, you know, he's the Zuckerberg of Vietnam. All of your friends, everybody, you know, every government official, everybody like, oh my goodness, I feel sorry for the guy.
Yeah. It's just this weird, perfect storm of what it takes to get something to go crazy on the internet. And nobody, he didn't intend for it to happen. But all those puzzle pieces are flying into place. You can see them. And as things got crazier and crazier over the news cycle about this game, over the time that it was happening, you just could see, oh no, that means they're going to pick it up. And that means they're going to do like a 5-part series on this thing. Now he's going to be upset. Like the viral DNA was just smeared up and down this story from the beginning.
Well, now let's take a look a couple, you know, months or year out. Right. This guy says he's going to make another game. Let's take him at his word. Say he makes another game.
Well, he's got two other games that are in the top charts right now. So, yeah.
Okay.
He's making games. He's already made a bunch of games.
Has he released a new one?
No.
Like since Flappy Bird got big?
No. Yeah. No.
He will release a new game. And because of the fact that when you, at least by the perception of, and let's admit here for the international listeners that this is an American biased idea, right? And this is an American reference, but he is the Dave Chappelle of iOS games. You know, he walked away at a point where it was very, very high.
Totally. And I hadn't thought of that comparison. That's exactly what this feels like.
And when, and Dave Chappelle has never come back and done the big, I'm back and I'm going to do something thing, right?
Nobody came back looking all buff. Remember that? So this guy will get all muscle bound.
I mean, who knows? All I'm saying is that this will be a big thing when he releases something else. It'll be a baseline story no matter what it is. And it'll be curious to see how we react to it.
I think it'll be a story to an extent, but you know, the fact that he had other stuff that just didn't take off, that people just, that it was just, hey, we love you for this, but not for this. I don't know. You know, I don't know that it would be, you know, there's a time that goes enough past that you're like, what was that story interesting to us? And by then I think the developer King's going to already have trademarked, you know, the words Flappy.
Yeah.
Bird.
Yeah.
So,
something. Yeah. Good. King is all into however they can benefit from this. Flappy Bird Saga. There you go.
He's got two other successful games already that are still in the top 10, or they were a few days ago. I haven't actually checked today, but you know, he's still making money off of games in the App Store. They're just not getting that crazy reaction that tapping on a bird that's flying through some pipes that look like they're out of Super Mario Brothers got.
Yeah. All right. Well, here, real quick, yes or no. We don't have to make this a big thing. Do you think he will leave Vietnam and go somewhere else? If we are to assume that part of this is government pressure, then is defection or leaving his home country something that we think will happen, knowing nothing about this guy's life or who he is?
Do I hope that's true or do I think that's true? Because I
just think it.
Okay. I hope it's true. And I also think it's possible. I mean, the reason I hope it's true is I really want dark suited sunglass wearing agents from the CIA to be escorting this dude out of his country by the dark of night because of a damn bird game called Flappy
Flying
Bird.
Off the top of the embassy in Saigon in a helicopter.
And just barely
here
missing.
Here we go, Tom.
That was for you, Justin.
I don't know. Like, if I was 20 years old, I would probably want to go live in Hanoi right now. Mm. You know, it's a happening place. It's really a happening and exciting place in many ways.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's a young culture, young people, whatever.
Like Shanghai is cool too.
This is not a situation where like Zynga as the New York Yankees look to sign the prospect from overseas.
You know, I don't think this guy wants that. I don't think he wants to leave his country. I don't think it's that kind of government pressure. It's not that 60s era Stalin-esque pressure. It's more like, this isn't how our society works. And I think he probably somewhat agrees from the things I've read on Twitter. I can't overestimate though how little I understand of his culture and the motivations there, though.
Yeah. And would he get a dime of it? If, let's say it was 50K, let's say it was 5K. Is he going to see any of that money?
Yeah, I think he will.
Will he?
I mean, okay. Vietnam is, like we said, it's a vibrant place, a marketplace. It's emerging. It's certainly different And it's run very differently. But I don't think it's the kind of place where all of his money just gets taken.
But like Vietnam tax agents aren't going to come to the house and say,
oh, they're going to take a chunk of it. Yeah, of course.
49.
Yeah, they're
going to
take, but yeah, what he's going to be, again, what he's going to be left, if they take 90% tax, he's still going to be in the top 1% wealthy people in that country.
That's a good point. Yeah,
just like the Netherlands.
Yeah. All right, well, that leads us straight to this.
America scores and wins.
Oh, looky here, everybody. It's time for our quiz. We do a pop quiz each week, and we subject our guests to terrible questions about things they're into. I don't see
the answers anywhere on this sheet you sent to prepare me.
That's by design. So let's see how you do. Andrew, you're actually going first. So are you ready?
There are a lot of dogs barking in back of me. So if I don't understand or hear the question, it's that and not
all stupid. Right. I understand. Sure. Here's the deal. It's magic trivia. And because we couldn't think of anything else to throw at you, because you're in the middle of an awesome show on A&E and we wanted to make sure to, you know, pump that up. So here you go. Trivia about magic. Question number one. And Tom, by the way, is going to score this, and he's real weird about it. So just know that.
No, I'm not weird. No, Scott, there's a very long and complicated set of rules that govern the scoring that go back for centuries.
And I just don't understand them. It's like Baccarat. What's even going on over there? I don't even know.
Really? Yeah, it makes Baccarat look like rummy.
Sure. I don't even know whether I even said that. All right, Flappy Bird, are we ready? Oh, Flappy Bird's ready. All right, here we go. Andrew Main, your first question. What magician was known as the man who fooled Houdini?
That would have been Vernon.
Correct. Dave Vernon is the absolute correct
answer. You guys actually screwed up. This one is actually, this is the highest score that will ever be scored on Curry King. Will be scored by Andrew in this.
Why would that be screwing up?
He's just jinxed me, by the way. Yeah. Okay, I'm just not going to get any right.
That wasn't my point, Andrew. I wasn't trying to jinx you by saying that you know more about magic than any other guest who has been or will be on this show.
So he'll probably win.
Win. But I don't know. Tom's weird scoring. I mean, I'm sorry. Tom's highly structured, easy to understand scoring may say otherwise. We'll see. Next. What is most commonly hidden in a thumb tip trick?
Well, okay. There's two answers to that question.
Okay.
Okay. And it's actually probably a bill, but it's some people would probably want to say a handkerchief or a silk, but it's a bill.
It is both. I will take handkerchief or bill because you are correct. Those are the top two. Nicely done.
We're going to take off a quarter point per prevarication.
See? It's kicking in. All right. What magician wrote the book Cards as Weapons?
Ricky Jay. I have a first edition.
Jeez Louise. You're
right. Two points, no pause.
Justin's totally right about this. The only known footage of the magician Cardini is from what television show?
Ed Sullivan.
Oh. The Festival of Magic is the correct answer.
Yeah. That was my second guess.
All right.
Negative one.
You give him one for that. How would one describe a pack of...
I have seen said footage, though.
Oh, you have?
Magic Castle. All right.
So a quarter point for extending.
Display.
Oh, nice. All right. A quarter point off or added?
Off.
Okay.
Yeah. Delay of game.
How would one describe a pack of Svengali cards?
I'm not allowed to describe that. I would say it's very useful.
Okay, I'm going to give him, that's a really good point. I'm going
to
give him
2 points for sticking to the code, man. It's both. Right there.
Nicely done. Okay, next up. How old was David Copperfield when he started teaching magic at NYU?
They said that he was 16.
It may not be true, but yes, point. That is the correct answer. What was Harry Houdini's real name?
Eric Weiss.
Jeez, you're killing it.
Single point.
Next up, how many days was David Blaine suspended in a transparent case without food or sleep?
Too many.
44 is the correct answer, but that technically is too many. So Tom,
he's going to get a half point because David Blaine doesn't exist.
All right, fine. Perfect.
True.
What magician debuted on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson before taking his show to the, I can't say this, Follies
Bergère. That'd be Lance Burton.
All right, there you go. I'm glad you figured something out.
I'm going to take a quarter point off for being a little bit of a smartass.
Last question. How did Harry Houdini...
used to perform in a strip club, right?
Oh, we did? Weird. Was that also a dumb French word
I
can't pronounce?
Yes, okay. You want a point for that?
No. Only Tom, you can give one to Justin for knowing that. How did Harry Houdini die? Your last question.
Well, there was a ruptured appendix is what they reported it as. And it could have been acute appendicitis. It could have been brought on by stomach trauma.
Oh, we're going to have to give it to him because how it could have been stomach trauma is the correct answer here. possible.
Well, there's
punch
there's
to the
there's
gut.
The acceptable there's the story, but then there's the whole book. You know, the was it The Secret Life of Harry Houdini?
That yes,
that Kaufman wrote. Or not Kaufman. I can't remember.
Will
so we're gonna give two points to Andrew for that, for knowing more than the question it was necessary, and we're taking a point off of Justin for trying to horn in on his answer and not even really knowing it.
I know.
I told you.
Yeah. He was a spy. According to that book, he was a spy. It's really well researched, but it's very interesting.
Wait, is that true? He was a spy?
I would love
to
read
that. The book has certainly been contentious, but what they did is they took every bit of information they could about Houdini, and they have a computer system. It's called, if you go to the Conjuring Arts Research Center, I believe it's called, they have a system called Ask Alexander, and they put into this computer every show program, every bit of data about Houdini, and they matched that up. And there is credible evidence that he provided assistance to the United States government, various law enforcement agencies, both inside and outside in other countries, as far as doing spying. And he, you know, had a very good relationship with sheriffs and police departments. And you'd see him do these escapes, and there'd be all these police on stage, and he would go afterwards to go do presentations for them. And there are accounts that he may have like helped break up bootlegger, you know, gangs and stuff. And so he was prone to exaggeration, but who knows?
That's intense.
All right, I'm giving a point back to Justin for launching Andrew into a really interesting story.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Perfect for the show, it turns out. All right, Justin, it's your turn,
oh,
man.
Real fast, if you want to look up a really good Houdini biography, there's also Houdini! ! By Kenneth Silver. And guess what? Houdini had an affair with Jack London's wife.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
Nice.
Call of the Wild.
The White Fang right there. Look at me with my Jack London knowledge.
Drank in a bar Jack London that drank at.
Oh, really? Weird.
Yeah.
Was the drink called a White Fang or what was it?
A Slanted Floor.
Oh, even weirder. Okay. Justin Robert Young, your turn to do Doctor Who trivia.
Oh, good God.
Doctor
Andrew
Who.
Andrew will actually know more about this than I will.
I think give him a point for modesty. Okay, here we go. That's up
false
to you.
Modesty.
False.
No, this is not. Yeah, this is not. If this is not all.
The Gallifrey like One convention is going on right now, mere miles from my house.
Mm. You should be there. No, you shouldn't. You should be doing the show. Here's your first one. What part of the TARDIS controls how it appears? No. It's got a name.
The fart capsule.
-1, it's the chameleon circuit.
It's the chameleon circuit. That is correct. Tom can't see these answers, so I'm impressed. Nice job, Tom. Don't give yourself any points because
you have no idea how much like I am sweating right now. You have no idea how much it is. I do not fear much in life. I fear being de-pantsed as with any kind of geek cred publicly.
Just keep thinking of Veronica Bellman calling it the tardy.
Yeah, the tardy. V called it a tardy once, so don't worry about it. Next up, which companion has met the most incarnations of the Doctor?
Hello, it would have to be Clara, right?
Sarah Jane Smith is the correct answer.
No
points for that. Because he's probably... You know what? I'm gonna give you a half point back because technically Clara has met all of the doctors now, according to the recent...
Yeah, there was that last episode where she was involved with all of them.
Yep. See, this is the trick with this Doctor Who crap. Stuff comes around and bites you. All right. Next one. Which doctor would often take out a recorder and play on it? Meaning like, you know, the flute-looking recorder.
I can't remember his name. I can't remember which one it is.
I would accept which doctor in terms of number.
No, I don't. Yeah.
The second doctor is the correct answer.
No points.
What time period does the robotic dog canine come from?
Like,
wait.
In life?
No. The robotic dog...
No.
What do you mean by time period?
Like when did it premiere on the show or like...
They gave a year. Is my understanding.
Oh, like what year did K-9 appear?
1982.
Let's check. 5000 AD.
Oh, wait, no, but okay, we're not going to take any points off. We're actually going to give him a quarter point because that was confusing.
I agree. And I don't know anything about that answer.
I actually made a K-9 when I was a kid.
You made one?
I made one.
Good
it was,
Lord.
I used a computer brush board is the metal outside of it and riveted it together and had a little robot thing inside of it.
Did you make a Jim Belushi to go with it? To get the reference? No, nobody got the reference. Okay.
No.
It's a terrible movie. Don't watch
that.
K-9.
Don't appreciate that. Yeah. No, that's my childhood. It was a lonely childhood. And you've only made it worse.
Go see the movie K-9 with Jim Belushi. Anyway, what?
Here's the fun thing. I actually would have done better at the magic trivia.
I know you would have. That's the fun with this. Okay, six. Next question. Who knitted the Fourth Doctor's epic scarf?
Betsy Ross.
It would be incorrect. That would be Madame Nostradamus. And I'll take your words for it that person exists. I have no idea. What?
You're asking him questions about a franchise that has a 50-year history in like how many hundreds of episodes?
That's all right. This is
magic
the fun.
Has an even longer history, Andrew.
What? True that.
Good point. Exactly. And you guys asked about like six, like four different practices and six different people. Because that's all anybody knows about magic. It's like six people and four different kinds of things.
It's a good point. But you have five chances here to just blow everybody away. So here you
go.
Well,
let's see if it happens. Hold your breath, kids.
Yeah, be ready. Here we go. What European city was the first foreign city used for a shooting location for Doctor Who? Foreign to the U.S., I should say.
Foreign to the U.K.?
Well, foreign to the U.K. as well.
European city was the first non-U.K. location?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Did I say U.S.? Yes, U.K. Yes.
Portugal.
That would be incorrect. Paris is the actual answer. Next up, how many actors have played Davros?
Three.
Oh, four is the correct answer. Tom, you going to give him anything on that?
That's nothing. Yeah, right. These are ridiculous questions.
What planet do the Ice Warriors come from?
I don't know, but they sure gave the Onion Knight a real pisser of a time on that submarine.
Didn't they know? That would be Mars would be the correct answer. No, second to last, Amy Pond and Rory Williams come from what English town?
Slough.
Incorrect. That would be Ledworth. Although I like the Office reference. Nice job.
Okay. Now, by the way, now not only do I have the cold eyes of everybody who is either watching this live or downloading it, but I look to my right and I have my lovely girlfriend, Ashley Paramore, just shaking her head in disgust and just stink eyeing me.
Let me just point out there were no David Tennant era questions.
Yeah. Which is really where Justin's heart lies. No question.
I'm the one that got him into Doctor Who, I think.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't think I knew a single answer to any of those.
Oh, wow. All right. Then here's your one you're going to get. Final one. If you don't get this, then people have a reason to be disappointed. It's the only question they really should. Here it is. What is the iconic catchphrase of the Daleks?
The Daleks.
Daleks, whatever.
Now Justin gets a point for being asked a question with the pronunciation Dalek.
I don't watch Doctor Who. I need to. I'm just behind.
That would be exterminate.
That would be correct. You can do it in a voice, or you're good with just that?
Exterminate.
There you go.
Exterminate.
Extra point for that. Excellent. Actually, extra point for every time you said it.
All right. Three times. 3 points. All right, Tom, sum it up. How'd
Keep
they do?
Would make a good Dalek.
How'd they do? How'd they
Justin
score?
Justin Robert Young with a late rally finishes with 3.75 points, but the winner, Andrew Main, 9.75.
Our leader on the season, man. That is amazing. All right, good job. Just so you know, you beat Veronica's score.
I even tried to judge Andrew harshly, and I couldn't.
Yeah, and Andrew, you beat Veronica's score. If that helps you feel any better. I think she was like
that
two or something.
That makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah, you should.
Let me explain to you why it was inherently unfair to have magic as a subject compared to Doctor Who. Because right now, I'm going to gather how you get these questions is just by Googling stuff and finding random things on Wikipedias and stuff like that. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of websites that are dedicated to Doctor Who, both old and new. In the time, it took us 3 months?
Yep.
To have somebody who had never learned or performed a magic trick professionally in me to become the largest or most read magic news site on the internet. With
iTricks.com.
Yeah. Also, we asked Andrew Main questions about the discipline that is like at the heart of his career.
Yeah, good point.
We asked Justin questions about a TV show that he's dressed up as characters from a few times.
Well, good job then. I think that just says...
And by the way, none of the characters that I dress up as.
Right.
Right.
Right, exactly.
Well, he is wearing a Doctor Who shirt, whereas I'm wearing a SpaceX thing. You didn't ask me anything about like that. So.
Oh, yeah, we kind of talked about space.
You should have done 9 questions about rocket telemetry for
Andrew. Not a clue. Wow. Not a clue.
All right. Well, we will remember this next time you're on. Surely.
I think it was a great selection, gentlemen. I think
I understand Justin's worry. Because I'm sure some people are like, you know, there's a little bit of excuse making going on there. But the Doctor Who fan audience, thankfully, is all in a hotel a few miles away, or else they just go for blood at people sometimes.
Oh, I'll get trouble, even though I've openly said I haven't really watched much Doctor Who in my life, and I said Dalek wrong. I'll get crap for that, and I already disclaimed it. So
Iceworm's already on Twitter going, Scott made me write those.
I said, how about some good Doctor Who trivia for him? So it is my fault, I guess, in the beginning.
Well, at least we haven't all self-selected by putting the name Geek on top of everything and saying, yes, all of your very peculiar interests gather here so we can discuss genre arts.
Current, not Tom Baker era. No.
That's what I'm trying to say. Not the show ended before you were born.
All right. Well, with that note, everyone go get your weird colored scarves on. It's time for this.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
The future promises even more startling things to come.
So briefly, our thing that we are forecasting today is a thing that just kind of came to my mind earlier, and that is I'm sure hearing a lot about wearable computing, whether it be something like Google Glass or smartwatches or the like. I have a prediction, and I'd love everyone's take on it, that wearable computing will look nothing like we are seeing right now with these current technologies, that we are kind of barking up some wrong trees, for lack of explaining it in a better way, that the glasses are goofy, and unless they're completely integrated to the point that you can't tell the difference between that guy's glasses and a regular pair of glasses, then I think those are out. And I also don't want that to be the way things go, because then you don't know who's filming you at any given time. So there's a problem even if we do hide it well. I think that wearable computing will not look like what it looks like.
Scott,
today.
That's ridiculous. I'm holding here a computer that I bought in 1982. And I want you to tell me that the computers we use today don't look exactly like this now.
What is it? Hold on.
It's a Timex
Sinclair. Oh,
look at that, dude.
By Jeez. Sir Clive Sinclair, the famous.
Look at that. Doesn't that just look like the lightning port from the iPhone?
Yeah, that's right exactly there? That's right.
Of course it does.
To be fair, like just that, what you just held up for anybody who's listening, like just go ahead and Google you. Timex Sinclair so you can see just like the front of it. If like that real estate does not look crazy, like it's on Mars compared to super thin laptops or those like, you know, laptop tablet kind of things like the yoga and stuff like that, where you can bend it in all different ways. It kind of looks like a laptop that was folded up.
Yeah. I they were a little bit ahead of their time. I would argue that's true. Yeah,
except it wasn't a laptop.
Right. But you also wouldn't say that it's wearable.
No, but,
right?
but the question is, will it look nothing? And so when it comes to wearables, we're talking about wrist, you know, the watch model, and for eyes, the glasses model.
Sure.
I hold here a Microsoft Surface for comparison. And you know what? You know, Justin's got a point.
Yeah.
They're not ridiculously different. I think that actually bears on the prediction quite well, which is they aren't going to look like Google Glass and watches, but there are elements there that probably will survive.
I mean, you're going to need, you know, I mean, with computers, as we move away from the input type and we go to like transitional things like touch and all that, you certainly see a shift. But the only people I've seen literally with Bluetooth ear sets are like taxi drivers. And, you know, we had a very easy way to put information into your head, whatever, and we did not like them. For most of us, we did not like them. It sort of reached its point and then it declined. And I agree with Scott totally. Wearables, whatever they're going to be. I mean, it was hard. You know, we started carrying around cell phones because it was so useful to have this in your pocket. It was so practical to keep this in your pocket that we're willing to sacrifice the pocket space. And when we started getting the StarTacs and the smaller ones, where it didn't take up as much space, you could have, if you had a Costanza wallet, having this wasn't that big of a sacrifice. We did that. But to get us to carry another gadget, another thing, it has to be so compelling for us to do that. And the Bluetooth, and even that, which things are tiny, isn't compelling enough for most people to use them.
Yep. I agree.
And this coming from, how many Apple Bluetooths did you wash?
Oh, Andrew? My God. Yeah. I've gone through some of it. I think that, you know, we're going to, as we extend the cloud to all the devices around us in our cars and the other spaces we are, I think that it's going to start to take the form of the way we use, you know, computing in other places. And if it's going to be, if you're going to be so needing a computer when you walk down the street, not want to take your phone out, then yeah, maybe you'll pull out your Google Glass. But I know, I just don't want more damn accessory.
Yeah. I mean, the Google Glass is not a good product. And I feel like it's been something that would have benefited me to put on over the last 6 months. And I just haven't done it. Like Google's offered.
You have one, right?
I have one. Google's offered for me to send it back and get the new version. And I just haven't brought myself to like put it in the box that they sent me to send it back because it's not a particularly compelling thing for me. And I from what I've read about the new version, it doesn't really solve a lot of those problems. I think that we are closer to having a compelling product, although I don't think that we are looking at, you know, the breakthrough vertical with a smartwatch, in that I think it makes sense for Apple to do one specifically or for Google to do one specifically, because the two issues that these devices have, I mean, I tested one for Before You Buy, Ashley's got a Fitbit now, is the data getting to more relevant areas of your life and having it be just in the internet and having another program quantify what the data it is, you know, what the data it is getting and how it can better serve you. And at this point on the Fitbit, you got to open up your app to have it update that data via Bluetooth connection and battery, you know, and it makes sense for Apple because Apple or Android can run that in the background. You can have it always be feeding and you can have a smart way to do that. But even then, that's getting the data there, which is one big problem. The harder part is quantifying why we give a rat's ass about it.
I'll believe, like, I'll consider the watch or something when it allows me to leave my phone at home, when I don't have to have it tethered to something else. If I can get my calls or I can do whatever I want on that thing, and if I want to go out there and not have the burden, that's when it becomes compelling to me. But when it's my thing in my pocket plus a thing in my head, and like, listen, I had LASIK, so I don't have to wear stupid glasses. You're not conning me back into them.
Right.
And, you know, but I'm all, you know, where the future goes. I mean, there are so many exciting things out there about, you know, we have display technology that can actually project straight into your eye. And you start thinking about the idea that you move from having displays to putting a couple of these projectors around your house or on surfaces, or pull out your phone or whatever, and you don't have a thing on your head, but you see that display right there without having to do that. There's a whole fascinating world of technology that's in the lab right now that, like, really good touchscreens were a few years ago, et cetera, that I think then it's going to change the paradigm.
Yep. Implants, weird projections. I'm all into that.
Or you can go the Her model and just have the all voice internet.
Why
you know,
not?
That is.
And that's. And that's absolutely, you know, a thing that, you know, for years on Weird Things we've been talking about is just the idea of when you get really good voice interactions, you know, what does information become then when you can ask it for something and it knows what you mean and it can understand how to put things in context? The audio only internet is just a fascinating concept.
Yeah. There's some,
I think that heads up display in Google Glass is probably the thing that will carry over into what wearable technology becomes. And I think wearable technology has a good chance. I'm not convinced, but I think it has a good chance to become implanted technology.
Man, so, I'll tell you what, like, but have you, I mean, cause you played around a lot with Google Glass, like Eileen has them, right?
Or no, do
you
have them? Neither one of us have them.
Neither one of you has them. All right. I don't know what I need up in my face like that.
Well, like, what I'm thinking is, so if you have an unobtrusive, maybe like it's a miniature version of the projector Andrew's talking about, just goes right in the retina, and it knows, it combines with that idea of like, I know when you need to know something. So you're driving and it says, hey, alternate route, boom, and it just puts an arrow in your, like, field of vision.
But that I would kind say, of Tom, stuff can instead be really, of getting an implant, like you like driving, you, there's a great case to just build that technology into the dashboard to project it. Or
I think the implant, though, implies it doesn't, I don't have to have be in my car. I don't have to be in my house. I can get that information no matter where I am.
I guess, you know, my bias, my fear is just the upgrade cycle of which we do these things, you know, I see that when we have a future, when we get into, like, you know, you know, electroorganics or whatever you want to call them, you know, biomechanical sort of things like that, that then just rapidly dissolve after a certain point. You're not worried or
unscrew the old one, screw the new one back.
But I think there's so many intermediary things before we get there, they're going to be fascinating.
Yeah, no, you're probably right about that. Yeah, for sure.
Something will be retained, but all I know is in the HER model, the HER future, I'm cool with the voice stuff. I'm not so cool with looking like a many colors of Benetton mannequin model and having a mustache like that.
That's- yeah, but did you notice like their styling was basically like sans about old people, I've given up fashion. It was like very frumpy. The note, it was that was, I said, I love her again. Absolutely. One of the best, the only movie, the really most relevant movie on the Singularity ever. Just the idea that they look at how everybody's dressed, you're like, yeah, it's like, oh, I'm just going to sit around and eat Haagen-Dazs and not be part of the world.
Yeah, there's very much
did
an
you,
old guy.
Did you guys see the Jonah Hill parody?
No.
It's Jonah Hill as the Joaquin Phoenix character, except instead of Scarlett Johansson's voice as the voice of the OS, it's Jonah Hill's voice. So he falls in love with himself as an AI.
That sounds pretty good.
Very, 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 very well done. It was on SNL. And for those of you who have seen the movie, their take on the surrogate scene is worth the price of admission, which is free.
All right. Well, there you go. Quick feedback call for an email, rather, that we got somebody sent to us at currentgeek@gmail.com. You can send your own and we'll be happy to read them on the show. Good day, Mr. Johnson and Mr. Merritt Jean-Francois Dubois is this person's name. Did pretty good there with the French. Listening and enjoying to the latest Current Geek and the segment about moving consciousness, I'd like to recommend the book Kiln People by the excellent David Brin. The book, written in the detective novel style, tackles that very subject, and it's awesome. I'd rather you read my book, but let's be honest, you'll enjoy the David Brin book more. I'm surprised Tom didn't know about this book, being laser and all. Jean-Francois Dubois. So what do you say, Tom? That sounds good. It's also got your detective style noir kind of business going on.
Oh yeah, it sounds fantastic. I'm a little Brin dumb, and that also comes from a time period before Sword and Laser, but after I grew up,
right.
So my knowledge gets spotty in there. I apologize for not knowing about it.
Well, it's a good recommendation, and we appreciate it. You can send those recommendations, like I said, again to currentgeek@gmail.com. And that, ladies and gentlemen, brings us to the end of this fine show. Our guests were amazing. Andrew, people should know where they can find your awesome new show and follow it and support it and retweet about it and tell their friends about it, because all of us would like to see it live on forever in the annals of television. So tell us more about it. Where can they go? What do they need to do?
You're right. They should know. I am on A&E. If you go to aandetv.com, I think we have two more episodes coming up this Monday. Check your local times. It's like, they between the HD feeds and the regular feeds, it's different. So, but anyhow, Monday nights on A&E, don't trust Andrew Main.
It's great. And Andrew Main on Twitter, of course, follow him there.
Yeah,
he's got stuff going on. And there's
remember
weird
to use
things
the hashtag don't trust Main.
Yeah, we don't trust Main is the hashtag. I would keep putting his full name in the hashtag. I've been doing that wrong.
It don't matter.
I apologize for that. But our listeners are smarter than that. Justin Robert Young, what are you up to? Where should people go?
All right. So just the Twitter, probably twitter.com/JustinRYoung. We are working, me, Andrew, Tom, Veronica Belmont, and Brian are working on a project, diamondclub.tv. A fun place where you can watch a bunch of live content from the five of us. And then by proxy Scott, cause we all work with Scott on some level.
Yeah.
So yeah,
likely this show will end up being simulcast there as well, as my guess.
We're getting the Twitch integration, and also integration to another fine service that we will talk about now, which is strawpoll.me, something that me and Andrew work a lot with. Dan Dirks, it's a fantastic poll system. Do you guys use it with the Frog Pants shows?
I use it all the time. It's fantastic. It's always been good.
Yeah. So. Yeah. We will hopefully have a lot more cool stuff with that coming up. And
That was Dan's was a little bit overwhelmed this week. The straw poll got attacked by a denial of service attack that was like 37 gigabits per second, which is humongous.
Yeah.
And
just shut
with
you down.
No threats, no reason.
Our assumption was it was probably aimed at the IP address without knowing who was there, and it may have been a misidentification, but the service provider didn't want to give us a new IP address for the server, Linode. We asked them repeatedly, but they said just wait for it to go away. By the fourth day of waiting for this to stop, Dan decided to take it upon himself and moved it to entirely to a brand new server and a new system.
Good.
Guess what? No more attack.
Oh, crazy. Imagine
that's
that.
Nuts. Look
imagine
at that.
That. Weird.
Hey, Linode, happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, thanks, Linode.
Yeah,
thanks. It was frustrating because it was just all it would have taken is just give it us a different IP address, but
yeah,
they didn't want to do it.
French company, Linode. Just kidding. I don't know where they're from. I don't know anything about them. But yeah, good job, Dan Dirks. He's the man. And thank you guys for joining us. Tom, anything else before we go?
No, I just want to second the diamondclub.tv. That's been where you can watch Daily Tech News Show. Lately, we've been good about getting that up there, and we're working on getting all the stuff that all of us do, and it's really a place for the Diamond Club to watch the stuff that they want to watch, so yep. We're really excited about
it. It's a pretty cool idea, so keep your eyes on the prize.
One big plug, yeah. And you can watch it on diamondclub.tv, NSFW this Tuesday on the Twit Network, our guests, Scott Johnson and Brian Ibbett.
Oh, I know those guys.
Those are the guys from the morning stream.
Yeah, I heard of them. Oh, that's going to be great. We're stoked. So, hey, everybody, check it out. We're done. Thanks for being here. Andrew Allen did our theme music. We're at Current Geek on Twitter. Scott Johnson and Ace Detect as well. You can also find Justin R. Young on Twitter, of course, and Andrew Main at Andrew Main. CurrentGeek@gmail.com is our email address. CurrentGeek.reddit.com for our Reddit page. Submit some articles. We'd love to talk about them. And at CurrentGeek.com is where you can subscribe to the show. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom. For our lovely guests. We'll see you next time. So did I screw something up?
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. The topic this week is whether Amazon's latest innovation in patenting a method for anticipatory shipping will dominate the retail market. The patent claims a process of shipping products from distribution centers to localized hubs in accordance with business variables that are used to determine where those products are likely to be ordered by consumers before those orders come in. These business variables can include everything from standard demand forecasting, such as historical shipments, to more sophisticated forecasting based on web page views and duration on pages, how long a cursor remains over product images, and shopping cart and wish list activity for certain consumers. These latter types of forecasting would be innovative, but it's unlikely that they will be used thanks to significant privacy concerns and the high accuracy of the standard demand forecasting methods. Indeed, Amazon secured an earlier parent patent on a similar method of enterprise anticipatory shipping in December 2011, and the patent application is 10 years old. So this is not exactly the freshest innovation from Amazon. The bottom line is, anticipatory shipping is not all that innovative, and Amazon's patents on it will be nearly impossible to enforce against competitors. But the potential is there for incredible added innovation and efficiency. Now you have to excuse me, because I'm almost out of toilet paper, and I hear the drone dropping some off on my front porch. Convenient. Thanks for listening. Old episodes can be found on healertrek.blogspot.com. You can contact me with show comments on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.